Thank you for listening.
This is DJ Love Jones, producer of the world-famous Confessional and DJ for Necropolis, starting every Sunday, midnight to 3 a.m. I want to personally invite you to come on out to the Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, February 21st, starting at 7 p.m. Contessa de la Luna, host of the world-famous Confessional, will be live on stage reading your secrets and confessions prior to the movie. There'll be prizes. Come on out for a fun evening that benefits your community radio station, KBOO. That's Blazing Saddles, Thursday, February 21st, starting at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. See you there.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 11 o'clock. Coming up next on Stage and Studio, Susanna Mars speaks with writer and actor Anya Pearson and director Jamie M. Ray about Made to Dance in Burning Buildings, a Shaking the Tree Theater event. Their work poses the question, how do we heal from trauma? And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews photographer Sarah Graves about her work for the Portland Grid Project. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland 5 Centers for the Arts, presenting traditional Irish folk band The Chieftains, February 20th at the Newmark Theater. Tickets and more information is available online at portland5.com.
I'm D. May Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music from Made to Dance in Burning Buildings at Shaking the Tree Theater. The show opened last weekend, and today we bring you the feature interview of that show by Susanna Mars of Adventures in Artslandia. Susanna talked with writer, actor, and creator Anya Pearson about her new original work, Made to Dance in Burning Buildings. It's directed by Jamie Ray for Shaking the Tree Theater. The show runs through March 16th, and you can find out more about that at shaking-the-tree.com or at artslandia.com or kboo.fm/stage-and-studio. And now we join Susanna Mars of Artslandia, where she was recorded at
Dead Aunt Thelma's studio, and Mike Moore is engineering for us. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am sitting across from Anya Pearson and Jamie Ray, who are working on a piece called Made to Dance in Burning Buildings, which is by Anya. Jamie's directing it. Thank you so much for coming to talk to me today.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
It's a very exciting piece, Anya. And 2 years ago, I interviewed you about this piece. And I think it's exciting for people who are listening to know how long it takes to create a piece like this.
Yes. Well, this is my baby. So I guess people always ask me, like, how long did it take you to write it? And, like, how long have you been working on it? And I offer some version of the answer. Well, when do you start counting? Because this specific piece, the idea was birthed when I was 17. And it was in response to my teacher, a wonderful teacher, shout out to public school in California, my AP Blacklit teacher assigned for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough, mm-hmm. by Intozaki Shange. And that book saved my life. And it's also the reason that I became an artist. And after reading it and then getting to see a production of it, I knew that I wanted to be to girls of the next generation what Entozaki Shange was for me. Mm-hmm. You know, she not only did she keep me alive, literally, but she also gave me the hope and the strength to be able to know that even when I didn't know how it was going to happen, that one day I would be able to survive what was going on in my life, the depths of my PTSD and my despair, because I needed to get to the other side so that I could share my story and have it be something that could hopefully empower other survivors. And that is this play. And so this iteration of it, Jamie and I have been working on together since 2016. And then you and I talked about it in 2017 when we were doing a workshop here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And then we had the privilege of going to New York last year to do it at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater,
where a New York theater critic, Anthony Piccioni, called it a standout.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
And now we are back in Portland for the world premiere at Shaking the Tree.
Bringing up that critical remark, which I think is always interesting to think about personal work and how those types of remarks impact you throughout this process. As an artist, I know I have to be somewhat careful about who I let in to my process. How do you protect yourself in that, especially in this type of work that is so deeply personal?
Yeah, it's a very delicate dance, I think, you know, one that I sometimes execute more successfully than others. It definitely helps having my work wife there with me. Jamie and I are creative soulmates, and so it is, I feel so grateful, more grateful than I can put into words, to have her by my side, mm-hmm. you know, because she's also my best friend. So like I can check in with her, and on a day when I'm feeling the emotional weight of the piece more than another, I can check in with her about that and say, you know, this is what I need to take care of myself in this day. Mm-hmm. And on other days, like I see the effect that the piece has on the collaborators in the room and the strength and the empowerment that they derive from it. And that gives me extra strength to be able to go there, to be able to hold the kind of out-of-body experience of my life story being acted out by 10 artists in a room. I get strength from the fact I created this piece to help others, which was, you know, the mission even back when I was 17, before I knew how I was going to get to the place where I could do it, you know, because this is how I fight, right? There's so many survivors who need something to help them keep going.
And you're speaking about being a survivor, and I just want to help everyone understand, sure. Who's listening, what are you a survivor of?
Well, I'm a survivor of many things, but specifically this play is about surviving rape. So I am a survivor of gang rape, and I am also a survivor of PTSD. Those are things that imprint on your life and you never fully get over. But the play itself is about the journey of healing, in that you learn how to move to a place where they are not actively destroying your life in a way that you cannot function. So the play chronicles the journey to be able to get to a place where you can pick yourself back up and survive life on a daily basis.
So here's an interesting question for you, Jamie. When you are working on a piece of this kind of emotional magnitude, and you have a lot of people in the room, and you have to honor, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to, but you would hope
but she does.
That people would honor the emotional content mm-hmm. of, well, Anya in particular, mm-hmm. and then everyone else in the room has their own dance with probably various other types of PTSD or abuse. How does the container hold all those stories? And then how do you also know when to say, now we're moving on to this, to what we're doing? You know, there's what you're doing, and then there's what is
coming up for you.
Do you do that as a director in a compassionate way?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's actually incredibly important to me. It's more important to me at the end of the day than making a great play. Now, I don't happen to believe those are mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. But if something were to come up in the room that we could not handle, that we could not hold, that would need to take priority. Because the piece is specifically about helping people navigate those things. Mm-hmm. So further perpetrating those things in your life, being another source of trauma for you, mm-hmm. is against the piece. To help make sure that doesn't happen, there's a few things. We actually screen for it in auditions. Mm. So it's on your audition form. We mm-hmm. talk about what the piece is about, and mm-hmm. we ask you to seriously consider whether or not this is something you want to go into in your life right now. And I emphasize it. You know, it's its own line, and they fill it out before they bring you their form. But then also, when we're talking right at the end of their audition, I ask them again. And because there are all kinds of reasons. Nothing bad has to have happened to you for you not to want to spend 10 weeks of your life in this kind of material.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that's a certain level of self-assessment from them, and then assessment from us in the room saying, does this feel good or not? And there have been times when other people have said, actually, I don't think this is healthy for me right now. And there have been times when Anya and I have agreed, this is probably not the best thing for this person right now.
It's so awesome, though. Even that consideration is a part of your larger process of engaging with people in an honest way about a very difficult subject.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end up on the stage necessarily. Maybe it does.
I guess I feel like everything, all of the care that you put into the room is what ends up on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the environment that the artists build with each other, those relationships, you know, like that is what ensemble looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell when that ensemble is taking care of each other
mm-hmm.
and when they're out on their own.
Yeah, those relationships are palpable.
Like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like you can tell. And while you might not be able to name it,
mm-hmm.
you know, from an audience perspective, whether they are connected to each other or not.
Yeah, and I think that really permeates the room.
Yeah.
In a spiritually interesting way and potentially even a physical way. I've talked about this with other artists about sound and how it permeates your body and
yeah.
feelings, and because they enter your body through your ear bones. And
it just,
it's kind of wonderful to think of it in that way.
And then the other thing that we do, this is actually not the first piece I have worked on that mm-hmm. is around this subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've partly had the privilege of learning over time, of mm-hmm. trying things that worked and not. But the other big thing, we actually start, there's a container that holds the day.
Mm-hmm.
We start, I have a little ritual, I will call it, but we have a way that we start and end every day. And mm-hmm. that has specifically is designed to hold space for whatever is coming up for you
mm-hmm.
without explicitly asking you, are you having, you know, stuff today? It's just a forum, and without fail, like if something is up for people, it comes up. And if you do it every day over time, it becomes, it's part of holding that safe space.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a spiel that we talk about at the beginning, just saying like things are going to come up for you. And mm-hmm. here's a whole chain of people that you can talk to, whoever feels comfortable for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the directing process is a little different. You know, some part of my eye is always on how is the room doing today.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, on this piece, we had one day where one of the artists, she just broke down crying.
Mm-hmm.
And she was okay. But
crying's all okay.
You know?
Another but like part of our culture, we're like, oh, she's crying. Like, that's actually just part of
super
life.
Healthy, right?
Yeah.
But it did mean, you know, but like in assessing the room, I was like, but we need to stop and let that be as long as it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
So other people ran their lines and, you know, and we sat with her and Anya had a chat with her and I had a chat with her just to kind of wait until she was where she needed to be. And mm-hmm. we closed out our day and went home. So it's part of it is just being willing to recognize that the plan you made for the day is not necessarily going to be the most important thing that happens.
Oh, life.
Yeah, right?
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to Susanna Mars of Adventures in Artslandia, talking with writer, actor Anya Pearson and director Jamie Ray about their new production of Made to Dance in Burning Buildings, created by Anya Pearson. The show runs through March 16th at Shaking the Tree Theater, and you can find out more at artslandia.com or kibu.fm/stageandstudio.
So here's an interesting thing I've been thinking about a lot is how do you as artists wake up in the morning to ready yourselves for the task at hand?
Hmm.
Do you have a ritual? I mean, I was interested in the ritual that you use to open and close your rehearsals because I find that lots of these things that we do as artists are really lovely for people who aren't artists to think about how to mm-hmm. open up the space to be engaged in a meaningful and generous way in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How do you wake up in the morning? Do you have rituals that you do to help you open up for the day?
I think something I'm still trying to solve for myself, that I was just talking to Jamie about this yesterday, is how to do it all. And
women.
So, like, yeah, right? So my day starts every morning by trying to get out of the house on time to get my daughter to school.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
Which, you know, doesn't always happen on time. But I feel like one of the things that I'm struggling with is how to figure out how to get everything done in a day, which usually doesn't happen because there's like, I said to my daughter the other day, I have a million things on my to-do list. And she said, a million? Really? And she ran downstairs to my mom and she was like, don't talk to mom. She has a million things on her list.
Oh.
Literally a million. She's very busy.
Oh, that's so sweet.
but that's how many feel like are on there. And I think one of the other things, like, about letting go of when the day doesn't go the way that you want it to go, that I think is independent of, like, the larger message of me trying to empower survivors and tackle the insidiousness of rape culture with this play and make space for especially survivors of color, I am also interested in my life moving forward, trying to make more space for being in the mess of my life and allowing, by leading through example, other women to be in the mess of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed, especially with this process, like, the more that I am allowing people to see my mess, the more it gives them permission to be in their mess.
And women are not often given the permission to look messy.
Mm-hmm.
We're
yeah.
supposed to be perfect.
Of course.
Everything's supposed to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh yeah, I just whipped this up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, life is challenging and it's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
And I just agree with that 100%. I love that you're exposing the mess.
Yeah.
I'm all
yeah.
for it. Started exposing
like,
the mess.
Yes,
the mess
campaign. Like,
look
one of
under the,
bed.
One
of the actors who is acting in Made to Dance was my dramaturg intern on another commission that I've been working on, which is an adaptation of Agamemnon. And so she and I have both been stressed because we, for January, we have been rehearsing every night of the week.
Oh,
and for like, she had not been doing double rehearsals on the weekend, but every night of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day in rehearsal, Jamie did this lovely thing where we had to say something that we admire about someone else in the room.
Mm.
And hers was how she has been feeling very stressed out about how busy she's been, but she's noticed how I have handled it with such grace, and I have been her rock because of how much I have handled it with grace. But internally, I have felt like such a mess through the process, but that, like, you know, veneer that you put on of like you can't show it to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I, while I so appreciated her comment, I felt like, oh, you know, I actually did her a disservice by not showing her that I was as stressed out as she was.
Yes.
Through that process.
Anya and I spend a lot of time talking about our stories in the room in an effort to be like, whatever is coming up for you is fine. And I have to be really careful, even on days when it feels like people are unfocused and not paying attention, to assess whether that's just people being tired and they need somebody to help them snap back into focus, and when that's because something is actually coming up for someone and they are having trouble executing
being in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then to invite that actually into the room to say, hey, let's actually stop and take a minute. What mm-hmm. is that for you? You know, we had an actor the other day who had this really intense physical, she like got scary claustrophobic all of a sudden. And mm-hmm. I saw it happen on her and I didn't know what it was until she named it. But she suddenly felt so stuck, and she was even having trouble telling me like what she did or didn't want to do. But ultimately being able to say, like, we can just make a new choice, like, was huge for that moment for her. And those little things that just remind you as a life practice, you're asking, what do we do in life practice? To say, actually, that is usually true in a lot of situations in your life.
Yes.
But because we get so focused on what we are supposed to be doing or what something is supposed to look like.
What we're after.
Or, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, or we are stuck in a traumatic pattern, recognizing that actually it can be a small thing.
And a generousness on your part. You know? As a director, you have an idea of what you want, but to have flexibility within
sure.
that is
yeah.
a generous
or
way
even
of being.
Like, you know, the fear of maybe that's not the choice you want as the director, so
sure.
I'm afraid to ask for a new choice because I'm afraid I'm not going to please you
right.
by asking.
Right. And look yeah. and look like a diva.
Yeah.
Or all those other
sure,
words
right.
that people give artists who ask for
yeah.
what they want.
Yeah.
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 And so, like, it's actually fine that holding that container, you know, as Anya said, like, writing this piece is the way she fights.
Mm-hmm.
Working this way, the way we are working, is the way that I do. Like,
so
creating that space is actually a huge part of what's important to me in the making of it at all.
This thing I wrote down when I had watched some of excerpts on the site at Shaking the Tree
mm-hmm.
was the word securing affection. And I think that kind of speaks to where what we're talking about, the reasons why we dull ourselves to
mm-hmm.
showing our messes and so on. How do you think women can step out of the cycle that puts securing affection ahead of their own safety
mm.
and their own true self?
I think that is hands down the single biggest challenge that any baby girl born into this world right now has, because there are so many places that it comes at you, from advertising to built into the fabric of our language. If you think about most of the insults, most of them insult women. So it's like, I could talk for the rest of the interview about all of the ways in which there are little things that just insidiously permeate everywhere. So even when you are a woman is as self-aware and empowered as she knows how to be, that little girl has, that she is trying to breathe into the world, the deck is stacked against her. It is still legal to pay women less. It is still legal, you know, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think women taking care of each other is a huge part of it, because our culture also trains us to be against each other. Women fight each other as much as men do. And that culture, we are fed that. That is a taught experience.
Right. Competition.
Yeah.
It's tricky, right?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, certainly in the world of art making, similarly.
Yeah.
You have an opportunity to make work, and other people want to make work too, and how do you believe that there's enough for everybody?
Yes, there's definitely some...
That is actually so frustrating for me. I feel like by design, our work in particular, like theater in particular, is only successful when it is collaborative. And so naturally, by design, we are living that. Like, the success comes from working together, and how rarely we are able to take that outside of that room, even amongst each other as a community, is really frustrating to me. I feel the work you do every day shows you that it is better when we do it together.
But I feel like that, like... But at the same time, there is a natural sense of like infighting and catfighting, and why did she get that part and why didn't I get it? And, you know, like all of that kind of.
Again, people don't want to talk about the messy piece.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm hurting because I didn't get that job.
Right?
I could have done that. And you go and see it and you see that other person up doing it and you're like, I could have done it. But we don't tell anyone that. That would be unseemly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you sort of started by asking what can we do? And I feel like a lot of it is being willing to show your mess, as Anya was saying, being willing to recognize, like acknowledge, be honest with yourself about the situation that you're experiencing and how you're feeling about it. My mom was amazing. But one of the many little things that she did, she used to wear makeup every day and she didn't like it. But she did it because she felt like she had to be respected professionally, that was just the way the world works. And she was aware of that within her, and she did not want us to have it. And she explicitly named to both my sister and I multiple times when we were small that makeup is not bad. She also had a wonderful friend who wore makeup every day because she loved it. And it was like the way she treated herself. You know, it was part of her ritual in the morning. And she felt fancy and fabulous and not because she didn't think she was good enough without it, but because she just, it was her treat to herself. And so, you know, my mom made a point to say it's not about the makeup, but it is about whether... do it if you want to. And she said, and because she was just aware that she could say whatever she wanted, but we would be feeling what she's feeling. And if she didn't acknowledge that she does it, even though she doesn't like it, we would carry that. And she was like, don't, like, please hear what I'm saying, not what I'm doing, and know that I mean it. I just don't know how to live it. And it worked. Neither my sister nor I ever feel like we have to.
Right.
You know, so sometimes it's about being willing to be vulnerable and name the things that you are aware of on both sides, both to say it, but then acknowledge when you're not feeling empowered enough to live it yourself.
Yes.
In the hopes that other people, you know, be they your friends or your children.
Yeah, that's how I think it's a great... also to bring up, we're all on our path in trying to absorb these ideals and the ability to do those things. And just for your mom to acknowledge, you know, I'm on my path and this is where I'm at.
Yeah.
This is what I believe. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be like, I'm doing it. It's like, we're trying to do it. That's okay.
You know, what's inspired me lately, I've been thinking about that. I actually ask the cast that pretty regularly, just to bring things into the room so they can share them. And we have a resource page. So whatever, you know, if somebody is like, oh, I'm watching this comedy right now, and then everybody has access to it now or later. But what's really inspired me, this piece, it's a new piece. So it's constantly changing as we're discovering things and making it together. It's also a really individualized piece. This is now like the fourth group of people that Anya and I together have worked on it with in some workshop shape or form, and it is dramatically different every time. Like, the character shaping is really dependent on the specific actor, as opposed to a more traditional script that has a pretty defined, well-defined character that exists regardless of who's playing it. And as with any new work, there's been a bunch of challenges, and with any production, there's been a bunch of things that have been on fire. And this particular group of people has just constantly rallied for each other or for us, or to help. Like, every time something isn't working out, somebody is like, oh, I've got a friend who does that. I'll take care of that piece. Oh, I've got, you know, and last night, three of our dancers were there for a chunk of rehearsal, and we weren't able to work on the thing that we'd originally scheduled to work on with them. And they all, like, put their heads together to work on a bunch of music stuff. Like, just without anybody asking them. That's one of the pieces that we're still working on finding, and we're late in the game for that. We haven't found things that we were like, yes about. And so they just all went up on their headphones and devices, and they were talking with each other and making use of the time and being like, yeah, I got that.
That's awesome.
And so that's really, every day somebody does something like that. It's been really great.
Likewise, the people on the project are so inspiring. They're just some of the most wonderful and courageous and just really empathetic human beings. Like, the men are so wonderful and caring and empathetic, and despite the fact that, like, specifically the ones that are playing the assailants, there are three of them, they are the most lovely and wonderful men. You know, like, sweet. We need more of them in the world. And, like, they're a willingness as artists to play and experiment and go into those dark places. And then, because they're such lovely, caring men, like, after it's over, they are just like, and you know, like, you can, like, see it melt away, and you can see the cost of that going there for them, and what, you know, lovely humans they are. It's just beautiful, and the whole cast is just so wonderful, and they just treat the project with such care, and it's really inspiring. It's really beautiful.
Well, I would just encourage everybody to support this kind of work at Shaking the Tree, and the show's opening February 15th, and that will be just 2 days after everyone gets to hear this podcast, so I think everyone should be really excited to see how this work you're talking about comes to fruition. And you can check out what's happening at Shaking the Tree at shaking-the-tree.com. And Anya and Jamie, thanks so much for sharing the mess.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
That was Susanna Mars of Adventures in Artslandia talking with writer and actor Anya Pearson and director Jamie Ray about Anya's show Made to Dance in Burning Buildings, which is at Shaking the Tree Theater. And you can find out more at shaking-the-tree.com. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. This show will be online at kbu.fm/stageandstudio, and you can hear a longer version of this interview at artslandia.com. My thanks to Susanna Mars. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell. What did jazz artists Christian Scott Atunde Adjua, Pharoah Sanders, Steve Turay, Terrence Blanchard, and Marcus Strickland have in common? One, they are all performing at this year's PDX Jazz Festival. And two, they have all been featured on my program, Jazz in the New Millennium. Each one-hour episode focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective. The weekly show is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium, but it can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu at kboo.fm, clicking on audio, then podcasts, and scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. For the convenience of those who might be interested in attending one or more of these concerts, we have grouped the PDX jazz artists together into a special mini-season. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at kboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews photographer Sarah Graves about her work for the Portland Grid Project.
My name's Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Sarah Graves. Her work is on view now at Gallery 114 through March the 2nd as part of the Portland Grid Project. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
So you're part of the Portland Grid Project. People might know that Chris Rauschenberg started it a long time ago. The idea is to take pictures of the whole city, grid by grid. And the Gallery 114, if you go in, there's probably a dozen work by a dozen people. You have four pieces in the kind of back bit, you know, the sort of alcove on the way to the toilets. And these are silver gelatin prints.
Yes.
You shoot on film, develop yourself, so super analog. Just tell us a little bit about these four pieces that we can see. And I'll start with the one that looks like the corner of a building. It looks like an old factory or warehouse somewhere in Portland that you would never look at normally. And as a